Good afternoon. My name is Sharon Dreyer, registration number 19637, and I represent the appellant, Tony Anders. With me at council table is my co-counsel, Bradley Bartels. Tony Anders worked full-time as a classified or non-licensed employee in the Montrose County School District for more than 22 school years, first as a cook, then as a secretary, and then as head secretary at Olathe High School. When she was about to retire, she applied for a retirement bonus that was provided in the collective bargaining agreement. It would have given her a bonus of 1 year's salary upon her retirement. The collective bargaining agreement provided this retirement bonus to all classified employees who were employed prior to a specific date and who had at least 13 years of continuous service in the district. The school district denied the bonus to Ms. Anders because although she had worked in the school district full-time all of those years, for the first 4 months of her employment, she didn't have a written employment contract. The retirement bonus section of the collective bargaining agreement did not say anything about requiring written employment contracts in order to qualify for the retirement bonus. Ms. Anders filed a grievance, and the arbitrator who heard her grievance in a non-binding arbitration found that she was in fact entitled to the bonus under the collective bargaining agreement, and he recommended that the school district give her that bonus. However, the school board voted to reject the arbitrator's recommendation. Ms. Anders then brought a breach of contract lawsuit to enforce the terms of the collective bargaining agreement entitling her to the retirement bonus. She filed this lawsuit pursuant to an established line of cases entitling employees to bring individual breach of contract lawsuits to enforce collective bargaining agreements after they've exhausted the grievance and non-binding arbitration process in the collective bargaining agreement. But the school district moved to dismiss Ms. Anders' lawsuit, arguing that the only type of action that she could bring was a CRCP 10684 request for judicial review, which just happened to be time-barred at the time because of its 30-day limitations period. The Montrose District Court granted the school district's motion and dismissed the case.
Ms. Dreyer, can I take you back to the discussion about the collective bargaining agreement?
Yes.
When the Montrose County School District denied the request for the bonus, did they apply any kind of I guess I'd call it principles or law from the collective bargaining agreement that would allow them to make findings of fact, or did they just simply say we disagree?
There was nothing in the collective bargaining agreement that provided for the school board to make any kind of findings of fact or hold any kind of evidentiary or adjudicatory hearing. The only thing the school board was required to do was take, quote, official action to either accept or reject the arbitrator's recommendation. There was nothing in the collective bargaining agreement that required them to follow any particular established legal criteria in taking that official action or to apply the facts of the case to any specific rules of law. It was 100% complete discretionary. They could reject it or accept it for any reason or no reason. There's absolutely no criteria specified in the collective bargaining agreement for that decision.
Have there been other cases involving this retirement benefit whereby they could point to something and say, you know, we've had three of these cases where folks have applied for these retirement benefits, and here's the standards we've applied in those three cases. We're going to apply them here.
There's nothing in the record to that effect. We actually do have evidence, which would have gone into the record if the case had not been dismissed, showing that many people who didn't have written employment contracts for all portions of their employment were given the retirement bonus anyway. But I think what the lower court in this case really did that is really troubling is the fact that they've gone counter to long-standing case law holding that employees can bring individual breach of contract lawsuits to enforce the collective bargaining agreement after they exhaust the grievance and non-binding arbitration process. And that's exactly what Ms. Anders was trying to do here. There are no court decisions holding that a governmental employer's action on a grievance filed by an employee under a collective bargaining agreement. There's no case law that holds that that action constitutes a quasi-judicial action. None time whatsoever. Witter did not involve a grievance or a grievance hearing. The hearing that Mr. Witter had in that case was not a hearing that resulted because he had filed a grievance and went through the grievance process. It was an entirely different hearing that he was entitled to simply because it was a pre-termination hearing, and there's a requirement in the collective bargaining agreement that an employee be given a hearing before they could be terminated. In this case, there's absolutely no requirement in the collective bargaining agreement, in the grievance process, for the board to conduct a hearing when they take official action on the arbitrator's report. The lower court decision is contrary to the evidence in the record, both the evidence about the grievance process, which is in the record in its entirety, and the evidence about what actually happened here. First of all, it ignores the fact that the grievance process is a lengthy process with three or four different steps in it. And there is a step where a hearing is held, and the word hearing is used when the grievance process intended for a hearing to take place at a particular stage, it used the word hearing. And it did that at the arbitration stage. That's where the evidentiary hearing took place. That's where the adjudicatory proceeding took place, before the arbitrator. That's what the grievance process provides for, a hearing before the arbitrator. It does not provide for another hearing after that in front of the school board. Just the opposite. It only provides that the school board then just takes official action, which means a vote. Official action for a board like a school board means a vote in a public meeting. That's official action under the open meetings law. And that's all that they were required to do. They were not required to, and the parties did not intend for there to be any kind of a hearing at this part of the process. Now, the collective bargaining agreement is a document that was written jointly by the school district and the union. So it's not a document that the school district wrote on its own and to which it's entitled to some sort of deference in interpreting it. The school district is not entitled to any deference in interpreting a collective bargaining agreement. When you interpret a collective bargaining agreement, it's supposed to be interpreted according to the intent of both parties equally, primarily based on the language of the agreement. In this case, the language of the agreement is clear that there is no hearing whatsoever before the board when it takes official action. What the lower court has done here essentially is rewrite the party's contract and turn what is just supposed to be a formal vote and turn it into a hearing process that is not contemplated or required or intended by the collective bargaining agreement. The standard that the school district applied here, or I'm sorry, the standard that the court applied here, the standard that's in CRCP 10684, is not the appropriate standard for reviewing or deciding whether a collective bargaining agreement has been breached or not. CRCP 10684 is a very, very deferential standard that allows a decision of a governmental entity to be reversed only if there was an abuse of discretion. And the court in Witter, the Supreme Court in Witter, specifically explained that that kind of a standard is appropriate when it's appropriate to, quote, honor the decision of the governmental entity and afford them deference in their interpretation of their own policies. So that's when you use that type of a standard, an abuse of discretion standard, a 10684 standard. In this case, as I said, what's being interpreted is a collective bargaining agreement, a private agreement between two parties. That's not the kind of case where you apply an abuse of discretion standard. As I said, the school district is not entitled to deference in its opinion of how the collective bargaining agreement is interpreted. That is supposed to be interpreted according to the intent of both parties. The lower court and the school district have used the Witter case as basic justification for the position that they're taking, that this has to be a 10684 proceeding. But the Witter case is entirely different from this case in a number of respects. First of all, as I said, it didn't involve a grievance process. So when the court ruled that Mr. Witter needed to pursue his claim through a 10684 action, it wasn't reversing or going counter to long-established case law that an individual who has a grievance, an alleged violation of a collective bargaining agreement, can bring a breach of contract lawsuit directly in court once they've exhausted the grievance process. If the court, lower court's decision in this case is accepted and is upheld, that would really throw a wrench, essentially, into the process that's been in place, at least in Colorado, at least since the 1970s, with the with the decision involving collective bargaining agreements in the Littleton Education Association case. The case law has been clear in that case, in a case of Jefferson County School District versus Shorey, and in many cases subsequent to that, that an individual who alleges a violation of the collective bargaining agreement that they're covered by can bring an individual breach of contract action in court after exhausting the grievance process. They don't have to bring a 10684 action within 30 days for an abuse of discretion review. The lower court's ruling is contrary to the case law in Colorado. Also, the facts of what happened in Witter are different from the facts of what happened here. There's absolutely no evidence that any type of evidentiary or adjudicatory hearing took place before the school board in this case. Now, the plaintiff did unfortunately use the word hearing in her complaint to refer to the meeting where the board took official action on the arbitrator's report. And as I say, that in hindsight was not a good choice of a word, but what was clearly meant and is clear from the context is not that there was any kind of adjudicatory or evidentiary hearing. What that paragraph in the complaint goes on to say is that the board then heard the school district's lawyer present argument as to why the board shouldn't follow the arbitrator's decision. That's what they heard. The word hearing was used just in sort of the generic sense of any type of a situation where a presentation is made and parties hear it. It was not intended to mean that there was any kind of evidentiary or adjudicatory hearing, because there was not, and there was no evidence in the record that there was. The school district has made some assertions about what allegedly took place at that school board meeting, but they're merely assertions in their motion to dismiss. They're not evidence, and of course, since this is a motion to dismiss, the facts have to be accepted as presented by the plaintiff. If the facts are in dispute, then the plaintiff's version of the facts has to be believed for the purposes of the motion to dismiss. And so the bald assertions of the defendant that Ms. Anders presented testimony or presented witnesses cannot be accepted. They're not in the record, and in fact, they're in dispute. And if this case goes forward, the evidence will be presented showing that none of that occurred, that what occurred at that school board meeting was simply an argument presented by the school district's attorney to the school board about why they shouldn't follow the arbitrator's recommendation. That's not an adjudicatory hearing. That's not an evidentiary hearing. And it's not the kind of proceeding that is appropriately followed by a 10684 review action. Unless your honors have any more questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. John Fleming for the Montrose County School District, 15786. I would first like to address a couple of the things that were said by the appellant here, the plaintiff. They have argued throughout this process that there was no hearing, and yet counsel just now was talking about an arbitration hearing. So it sounds to me like they're actually confessing the fact that a hearing occurred. It may not be the hearing that we have raised as the district, but a hearing was held. It was the hearing by the arbitrator.
The hearing wasn't binding.
The hearing was not binding, that's correct.
So why would the board then be obligated, if it wasn't binding, wouldn't the board essentially, if this was an adjudicatory or evidentiary hearing, have to make some findings of fact and conclusions because it's not binding on it at all? I mean, doesn't, who's fighting?
Yes, and that's why we're arguing that there actually was a second hearing.
Well, what did the board say? And the board just said, no. It didn't give any reasons. It didn't weigh the evidence, did it?
Yes, it did, as a matter of fact, Your Honor.
Well, what in the record shows that? I mean, I don't remember seeing any order or any kind of analysis by the board. It just said, we're not going to do it.
Nothing in this record shows that because we didn't have to go that far. Because, in fact, the trial court read the complaint, read the contract, the contract between the parties, which laid out a very specific grievance procedure, which clearly created a quasi-judicial process toward the end, and said, yes, that process was followed. And the school board denied the bonus, and therefore Rule 106 came into effect.
Mr. Fleming, I'm sorry to interrupt, but ask this. I'm quoting from Shorey Supreme Court opinion. The existence of the grievance process in a collective bargaining agreement with a school district, quote, does not defeat the school district employee's independent standing to sue the school district for breach of contract, quote. How does that not govern here? That's not Rule 106.
Shorey went on to talk about the fact that the school district repudiated the grievance process and, in fact, used that as the argument that the case had, as I recall, the case had to be remanded to the trial court. Shorey never got to the issue of Rule 106 versus a breach of contract, versus a separate breach of contract lawsuit, because the Jeffco School District did not allow Shorey to go through the grievance process that was in the contract.
Mr. Fleming, how does a court in this instance review what took place below? Under 106, the court takes a look at the actions of the panel or the administrative authority, whatever the unit is, and determines whether there's an abuse of discretion. Here, when the board doesn't, there's no way to tell whether the board abused its discretion or not. So how can the district court judge possibly review this under 106?
Had this been filed under 106, the full record before the school board would have been filed. That would have included the transcript of the hearing. That would have included the discussion among the school board. That would have included the reasons that the school board took for making the decision they made.
But the school board can arbitrarily say no. They don't have to come up with any findings. They have no obligation to engage in reasoning. They don't even have to issue a written opinion. They can just say no.
I would agree that they can. They used reasoning, okay? In this case, the plaintiff is arguing that there's nothing in the contract that talks about why Ms. Anders should have been denied, but in fact that's not true. The definitions under the contract, that's Article 1 of the contract, talk about employment being the time that you work for the school district while under contract. So the school board looked at that, looked at the fact that she did not have a contract that first year, and the plaintiff has already admitted she didn't have a contract that first year, and said, based on that, we cannot honor the bonus. We took her facts, we related them to what Witter calls the law, which can be board policy, took the facts that Ms. Anders presented, compared them to the criteria laid out in the contract that the board had approved, and said, these facts don't meet these criteria, and therefore we are voting that we're not going to give her the bonus.
Sort of a summary judgment approach.
Yeah, it could be looked at as a summary judgment, yes.
Well, let's assume that, for purposes of discussion, that Zanders had filed a breach of contract claim directly, not... Your response would have been, you haven't exhausted your administrative remedies, go back and go through the grievance, right?
Yes.
Okay. So the trial court, under those circumstances, could have stayed the contract claim until that grievance process was complete. But you're saying then that even with the grievance process not being binding on any party, because the arbitrator can it's just an advisory opinion, and then that's supposed to be reviewed by the school board, and then it comes up under 106 review. You're saying you can't file a contract claim directly out of the box and just say, hold it, you know, I'm within my 2-year time frame on statute of limitations, let me go back and do the grievance, and we'll be back after that's done, if I'm still unhappy.
First of all, I don't think that the statute of limitations would begin until after the grievance process was completed. So the argument that Ms. Anders would have had to immediately have filed a Rule 106, which she made in the reply brief, before going through the grievance process, isn't there. You have to go through the grievance process first. It's the final action by the school board that creates the statute of limitations, the Rule 106 statute of limitations. We would argue that, in fact, Jeffco v. Shorey did state that there was, and I think it was Littleton also prior to that, stated that there was a breach of contract for teachers based on the master contracts. However, it didn't deal with contracts that had grievance procedures. In fact, Jeffco very specifically said the school board did not have the grievance procedure. So we're going to act as if that didn't happen. And now Ms. Shorey has a breach contract complaint available to her. We would argue that the teachers union, or anyone else for that matter, could bargain away that part of the complaint, that possibility of a complaint, by agreeing that the school board could set up a grievance procedure that was a quasi-judicial procedure, and that clearly happened in this case. There were all of the elements of a quasi-judicial procedure established in the grievance process. Right to counsel, right to witnesses, right to testify. There was a hearing that was held, and whether the plaintiff now wants to argue that, in fact, it was bad wording or not, the only evidence before the court was that there was a hearing before the board. And if you want to go through that, there was notice. Ms. Anders actually appeared at the hearing. She was asked if she wanted to testify. She decided against it. The board listened to, the board read the arbitrator's decision. The board listened to the administration, listened to me as counsel, looked at the master contract, said essentially, she doesn't qualify, she doesn't meet the definition of employee, and therefore we're going to find that we can't afford to give her, or we can't, under the contract, give her the bonus. Now, the plaintiff did say that if this ever goes to court, they'll have evidence that there were lots of other people without contracts who did get the bonus. And I will tell you that as counsel for the school district, I'm not aware of any. And we looked at that when this whole issue came up. So for what it's worth, it's the district's position, having gone back and researched it, that in fact, this is the first time this issue has come up. No one else who did not have a contract has been given a bonus. Your Honors, for those reasons, it's clear that There was at least one hearing admitted by the plaintiff. Court's position is there were two hearings, in fact. Ms. Anders had no opportunity to appear. She, in fact, did appear. She didn't testify, but she did appear. The board made a ruling. The Witter talks about it. Busick talks about it. There has to be that the board, in this case, the agency, has to take facts, compare those facts to circumstances based on the law. Witter talks about the law could mean a school board policy. In this case, we have a school board contract approved by the school board, and that becomes a quasi-judicial hearing, a quasi-judicial process, and therefore Rule 106 had to apply, and Ms. Anders, unfortunately, didn't file within 30 days. If there are no more questions, thank you.
I would like to respond, first of all, to the argument that there was a hearing, namely the arbitration. That arbitration hearing cannot constitute the quasi-judicial proceeding in this case because it was a hearing before a non-governmental entity, a private arbitrator selected by the parties, and also it was not binding. If that arbitration hearing was the quasi-judicial proceeding that took place here, then Ms. Anders won that proceeding and we wouldn't even be here today in the posture that we are. If that was the proceeding, then she would have won.
I think, as I understand Mr. Fleming's position, the board had the second hearing, and that by virtue of taking argument, by virtue of having before it the contract, and having before it the decision of the arbitrator, that was an adjudicatory proceeding.
Okay, well, I'd like to respond to that by saying, first of all, it is not. The grievance process does not provide for two hearings. That's silly in a way. I mean, the process is designed to be efficient and functional, and it didn't have a process with two hearings, one after another by one entity, and then by another hearing of all the evidence by another entity. It's just not set up that way. You read it, and it clearly doesn't say that. It says something totally different. Hearing before arbitrator, official action by board only, official action. That's all that they're required to do, and that's all that they're authorized to do. What took place was nothing more than a public school board meeting. There are rules that govern how public school board meetings are supposed to be conducted. That's the open meetings law. And that's what they were following when they held this meeting. That's why there was notice of the meeting. That's why there was an agenda. That's why the public could comment. It was a public school board meeting. That happens at every public school board meeting. It was the format that was followed is the basic format of a public school board meeting, not of a hearing, an adjudicatory or evidentiary hearing. Another point, and an important point that was evident in some of your questions to opposing counsel, is that there were no legal standards that the school board was required to follow when it took its official action. They had the complete discretion, which I believe the counsel admitted, they had the complete discretion to accept or reject the arbitrator's report for any reason that they chose. They were not required to apply a particular legal standard. It doesn't say that anywhere in the grievance process. That's not the intention. This was a contract that was bargained by the school district and the union. The school district did not agree to tie its hands in that contract by saying that it had to make its decision on the basis of certain criteria. It specifically did not want to bind its hands that way, and it didn't. And the collective bargaining agreement does not bind the school board's hands at all. It allows them to reject the recommendation for any reason or no reason. For example,
when your time has expired, we thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will also stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.